MacCast, Friday, September 30th, 2016. Hey, Mac Geeks, it's time for your MacCast, the show for Mac Geeks by Mac Geeks. I'm Adam, and this is the show where we discuss all things Macintosh. How you doing? Welcome back to the MacCast. Well, you know, there's something interesting about the MacCast, a little factoid. You probably noticed this. I think most people noticed this right away. One unique thing about this show is it's one of the rare podcasts that you're going to find that is a solo show. I am just the host. I'm here talking to you, and it's just you and I together. And many other shows are roundtables, they're panels, there's at least a co-host, something like that. And a lot of people ask me about why do I do a solo podcast and why have I not changed it? And the reality is that I've been doing this so long, over, you know, almost 12 years now, that when I started, there weren't other podcasters. There was really nobody else around to ask to kind of be my co-host. So I think it became a solo podcast just because that was all I could really do. And then the format worked. I think it really works. And I like it a lot. And people tell me they appreciate the fact that it's just a personal conversation between myself and them. And I, you know, I think that makes sense. So just talking to you is great. And I love sitting down with you every week and chatting, but every once in a while, I have to be honest, it gets a little bit lonely here in the MacCast studio. You feel a little bit odd just talking out into space. I know I'm not talking out into space because I'm talking to you, and that's sort of how I picture it, and that's how I'm able to kind of work through the show. But every once in a while, I do want to get some other people on the show, and so this week, I'm going to do exactly that. The other reason I'm doing that, this is we've had a bit of a heat wave here in Southern California, and I don't have air conditioning in the studio, and it gets really warm. So I want a little break from the heat. Hopefully it's going to cool off here pretty soon. So you'll hear me talk about that at the beginning of this episode. But I invited my friends Victor Cahiao and Kelly Gaumont on to chat with me. And really what I wanted to talk about is just all the stuff that has happened in the last couple months. You know, September was a big month for Apple products and software and hardware, both sides of it. We've got iOS 10, we've got new iPhones, new Apple Watch, Mac OS Sierra just dropped. So I wanted to get their take on, you know, how they're enjoying those products and the new operating systems. And we talked about tips and tricks and things that we liked and things that we didn't like. So it was a lot of fun. I think we always have a good time when we get together. And so I hope you enjoy this episode. But before we get into it, I do want to take a quick moment and I want to thank a couple of my show sponsors. First off is iMazing. I think I've told you about iMazing before, but this is a tool that lets you access, view, backup, and manage the data on your iOS devices. And you might be thinking, well, I can do that with iTunes. Yeah, you could do it with iTunes, but it's really pretty basic. What iMazing, the amazing thing about iMazing, and it really is that it lets you dig in and get at just about everything on your device, and there's no jailbreaking required. So you can get in there, you can manage your backups, you can restore selectively from backups, you can go into your backups and actually access things like the file system, the preferences. You can get in there and you can look at your call history. You can access all of your voicemails, save out the recordings. You can tweak your contacts, look at your notes and the notes data, photos, applications, music app, messages. All of that stuff is in there. And what's great about it is it's really easy to use. You install the software. It's got a very familiar Apple-like interface. They just updated it with a new design, new version, and it is fast. That's another thing, is that if you're doing tasks, like you want to pull a bunch of data off your phone, you can start a task running. It works asynchronously in the background, and then you can be off and managing another part of your device. And one of my favorite things, again, about it is it lets me browse and access my files. This is great for apps that don't store their data in the cloud. If you've ever done a clean install, or a, you know, what I guess on iOS, we call an erase and set up as new procedure, you'll know you can sometimes lose some valuable application data if that stuff doesn't sync back from the cloud. So iMazing is a great tool that will allow you to go back and recover some of that data, put it back into your application, save game data. I've used it in the past to recover image data from drawing applications and things like that, that, again, don't store that stuff in the cloud. So really great stuff. And you can check it out, try it out completely for free. And you can also get 20% off your order if you use the code MACCAST. So check out iMazing, iMazing.com. And big thanks to them for their support of the MACCAST. I'd also like to thank Gazelle for their support of the MACCAST. You know, I mentioned we've got new iPhones, new Apple Watches out right now. And maybe you want to get one of these new devices, but you don't have all that cash lying around. Well, you can actually go to Gazelle and get cash for your old iPhone, your old iPad. And Gazelle, what I love about them is they make the process super easy. It's right up front. You get an offer there on the website. All you have to do is go to gazelle.com, tell them what you have, you know, what model iPod you have, or iPhone rather. They do iPods too, but iPhone that you have. Answer a few simple questions about the condition, the kinds of accessories you have, and right there on screen, you get an instant price quote. And you don't have to worry if you have a broken device. Gazelle will accept those too. So just go to the website, check it out. And once you accept the offer, they give you 30 days to send that in. So if you want to go get your new device, make sure you transfer everything, wipe off, you know, clean off the old device before you send it into Gazelle, you can do that. And another great thing about Gazelle is the shipping is totally free, and in many cases, they provide you a box. When I've done exchanges through Gazelle, I love having them send me a box because it's packaged nicely. It gives you all, everything that you need, including the label to send it in. Again, it's all about making the whole process easy. And getting paid is easy as well. Once they receive your device, you get paid fast. You can get a check in the mail, Amazon gift card, delivered directly to your inbox via email or direct deposit in your PayPal account. The choice is yours. Gazelle has serviced over 1 million customers. They've paid out over $200 million to those customers, so they've been doing this a long time. They're really one of the best in the business, and you should check them out. So gazelle.com, get cash for your old iPhone, iPad, or Mac today, and a big thank you to them for their support of the MACCAST. All right, well, let's get in and talk to a couple of friends, Kelly Gaumont and Victor Cahiao. I invited them on, and here is my conversation with them. Enjoy. Hey, Victor, how you doing?
I'm great, Adam. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, thanks for coming. Glad to have you. And Kelly, how you doing?
I'm doing well, Adam. How are you?
Good. It's been too long. Well, I guess I should say good, except I'm roasting hot because we had a giant heat wave, and I have no air conditioning in my house. But my listeners already know that because I complained about it on my last show. So my little.
I don't know how you live in Southern California without an air conditioner. I know how I get away with it in Portland. I don't know how you get away with it there.
Yeah, and I'm not on the coast, but I'm more coastal than kind of between coastal and inland, so it can cool off. But I don't know. Something weird happened here at the end of the month, and it was getting nice and cool and fallish, and then boom, heat wave. So
we need NASA astronaut thermal suits.
Victor knows what I'm talking about, right?
Oh yeah. It was 104 here on Monday, so yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, so we're gonna have to all climb up to the coolness of the Pacific Northwest, Kelly.
Yes, I just broke out my long sleeve shirt today. I'm very excited about getting to break out the R2-D2 shirt again. Very excited.
Well, I was already telling you guys, I don't have a huge agenda for this show, but I realized I've been talking a lot about all the new stuff that has come out lately between Apple Watches and iPhones and potential, I guess, new Macs that we can maybe get into as well, and new operating systems. And I'm enjoying all that stuff, and I spoke by myself, but I wanted to get some other people on to talk about this stuff. So I guess maybe we should start somewhat in the order this stuff was released, meaning with iOS 10. I'm curious to get your guys' your guys' take on it, because my short synopsis is I love it.
I love it, but I have some complaints. They're very specific complaints.
Specific complaints.
In that they're small things. One of them, I feel better knowing I'm not alone in, because I've heard this from a number of people who updated, and that is that notifications are no longer grouped by app, and there's no option right now to do so. And I prefer that. And the reason I prefer that is because I have an app for my garage door. And it sends me notification every time it opens and every time it closes, which is four times a day when the car goes out of the garage and when the car comes back into the garage. So I get four notifications every single day, and I generally don't pay attention to them.
Right.
I need to have them because on the off chance that my door opens when I'm not home, I kind of need to know about that. So I have to sort of wade through all of those. No. Well, okay. One time it did.
Wow.
And the reason here's the thing. We were at Disneyland.
Right.
And the phones go off and say, your door's open, dude. And we're, holy crap. How is the door open? Who knows the code? Who can we get to go look? And then we get a text from my father-in-law that says, came by to check on the house. You guys had a package and I put it inside the garage. So crisis averted. But on the off chance that that's not why the garage door is opening, I need to know that. And so now I have all those notifications, and I used to be able to just go in and nuke all those notifications at once because it was by app, and I don't have the option to do that anymore. So I find that a little disappointing. Other problem is not quite so small, but it's more general, and that is that there's a lot of really cool stuff in iOS 10 that I don't know about because it's hidden.
Yeah,
you have to force press a thing or swipe a thing or whatever, you know. So like I randomly accidentally discovered that the music stuff is all like if you swipe over in the control center, the one where you swipe up from the bottom. I don't even remember what they're all called anymore. When you swipe up from the bottom, if you swipe from right to left, like, bam, there's a really awesome music controller back there. But I didn't know about that. I found it because I was trying to pull the control center back down, and it didn't work. It decided I was actually swiping sideways instead of swiping down. And it went, hey, here, have some music controls. I'm like, these are awesome. Wait, where did that come from?
Yeah, the multi-panel control center now.
Yeah.
Yep, yep.
Yeah, we were having a conversation about you know, some of the visual cues that maybe people don't look for or don't know about. And I think this is a good tip and a good point, because I mean, they're really minimized. And if you don't know to look for them, you know, just like this control center thing, because when you do swipe up, if you look way down at the bottom, you do have those three little dots, right? The little paging dots, mm-hmm. or what, I don't know what we call those, but there's an official word for those pips that are down there. Right. But you're not you're probably not going to see them if you're used to the old, you know, if you're coming from 9 and you're used to the old control center, because and there's three, because not only do you have the music controller, but if you have HomeKit and you use the Home app, you've got your HomeKit controls on the third panel.
Yeah, I think they're called cards, by the way, Adam.
Cards.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I don't know what the dots are, but card indicators or something. But my problem is that I had to quit looking at those dumb little dots because they didn't used to be dumb until the first one wasn't my first page anymore. The first one is now that stupid search bunch of shenanigans that drives me up a wall.
Oh, you're talking about from the springboard?
Yeah, in the springboard. The first page of my springboard is not my first page anymore. The first dot that lights up is that stupid search thing that I only ever ended up on before by accident. And I find it very frustrating because when I'm trying to do things and I'm like, oh, I'm not on the first page. And because I used to use those dots constantly, like, oh, it's not my first page. And I would just sort of glance because I know where all my stuff is. Like at this point, muscle memory has taught me, you know, if I stick my thumb right about there, that's going to be messages, or this one's going to be, you know, whatever it is. And my first page isn't my first page anymore, and I find it really frustrating.
And you don't use widgets, I'm assuming?
I do use widgets.
That's the page the widgets are on as well, right?
that's just another layer of frustration in my book at this point, because they don't, for me anyway, they're not always working how they should. Uh-huh. And like, I've tried to set them up and they don't do what I feel like they're supposed to be doing, which sounds, and they all take up more space. They used to be much closer together, but everything in iOS 10 is this weird balloon thing that seems to have carried over from Messages, which was never a feature in Messages I liked anyway. Like, I know when I'm talking and when you're talking, and I get that, but I don't need these stupid little speech balloons. And you could be using, if you're going to make me carry around that much screen, you could do a better job of making Messages efficient.
Right.
Yeah. The other thing,
even with stickers and all that stuff.
The other thing with Control Center that drives me a little bonkers is that, you know, why can't you keep switching between cards like a carousel and just keep going to the right and it'll get you back to the first one? No, you have to go all the way to the last one and then either touch your finger, you know, on the button cards, or it's just like, come on, just make it a carousel. There's only three or four screens. I mean, just do that.
Go around the horn.
Around the horn.
Or give
right,
me the
right,
feedback.
Right. Yes.
Give me feedback that's like, no.
And there should be, Kelly, there should be haptic feedback as you're flipping those. Feedback. Yeah,
I want haptic. If you're,
because it does, it does have the spring. It just that does have the spring back thing, right?
Yeah, but I'm not always looking. Like from the music card, you know, if I have that open, odds are good I'm in the car. So if I know I have to swipe twice to get to wherever it is I need to be or whatever, like, I'm not looking. I'm not paying attention.
Oh, that's interesting. You know, and that didn't really bother me. I guess I kind of knew about those cards, though, and I don't know. I like them. I get your guys' point. I mean, again, I think you prefaced this, Kelly, rightly so, with, like, these are little things, right?
Yeah,
these aren't major things. These are just, like,
because Raise to Wake makes me so happy.
Nitpicky, like, okay, so Raise to Wake, yes, I love. I am not loving the new press to unlock thing. I have to be honest. I've been using it now for how many months? Because I started with the beta and I'm still not very efficient at it. I'm getting more used to using the sleep wake button to wake up my phone. And that's sort of helped. But, you know, sort of waking up the phone, because sleep to wake works, or raise to wake works most of the time. But sometimes it doesn't, and then when you press the, you know, you press the home button because you want to see your lock screen, it's like, oh, dang it, I'm on the springboard now.
Yeah,
well,
I agree with you.
I found, and this is going to be another one of those specific things to me, because I have a 6S, and my 6S has that, when it was initially released, had that crazy fast Touch ID on lock, and I used to use the camera on the lock screen constantly.
Yeah.
So I learned to press the home button with my thumbnail.
Yeah.
So that it would get pressed, because I usually have long fingernails.
Right.
Or at least longer than the ends of my fingers. Anyway, they're not like claws or anything. And now that I've said that, I'm gonna break two of them. Because that's always how it works. But I found that I can like press it with my thumbnail and then swipe up the camera, you know, and I do like that the camera is a very obvious interaction with the front screen, the lock screen. I like the way that works. What I don't like with the additional card stuff is that one of the things that I use the most in lock, like you were talking about widgets, Adam. I used to use pull down from the top, tap on the all off button in my Hue widget, or tap on one of the light options in my Hue widget. And I can't do that anymore. And I have to wake up my phone to do it now, because pull down doesn't give me the same behavior that it used to. And like, so the things that I do the most with my phone are things that have been fundamentally changed. So those are things that I have been unhappy with.
So two.
But that's
things.
How I get around the home button for you.
Well, yeah, except when
you
upgrade,
grow a thumbnail.
except when you upgrade to a 7, which doesn't have a physical home button, and it's a haptic phone home button, and you can't use the fingernail trick anymore.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Well, I'm not. Because
you
that's not happening
do
anytime
the fingernail
soon,
so. And nothing. There's you get nothing because you're putting your fingernail on glass, solid glass. But on the Hue thing, is the Hue stuff not HomeKit compatible, and can you not access those same controls from the new HomeKit?
It is HomeKit compatible, but it doesn't. I wasn't able to get HomeKit to set up the way, like, at all, because apparently I'm some sort of crazy edge case by having stuff that I want to hook up to HomeKit, and HomeKit keeps going, "What do you mean devices?" So I'm going to have to take another crack at it when I'm less likely to rage quit the entire thing and so convert and become Amish and churn butter.
I guess what I'm trying to ask is those controls don't show up on the HomeKit card in the control center?
They don't now because it's not an automatic thing, and I haven't set it up yet. So I used to be able, in the olden days of, you know, a month ago, to pull down from the top of the screen and automatically get my screen of widgets. And my screen of widgets was laid out in iOS 9 fashion. So right where my thumb would normally be, I can hit my off button or my turn on the basement lights or my turn on the bedroom light or whatever, you know, scene I have set up that I want to use. And now when I pull down from the top, it automatically gives me notifications, which are also screwed up and I don't like. So now I have to pull down and then swipe over left. And then scroll down some more because everything takes up more space in 10.
Yeah.
And when you do that 26 times a day, it's really aggravating because I have a lot of lights. And as winter comes and I have to turn the lights on earlier every day and leave them on later in the morning, it's just going to get more frustrating. So I'm going to have to figure out a better way to handle those.
What were you saying, Victor?
I only have 5 of the Hue bulbs, and integration with HomeKit was, you know, easy. It absolutely did everything I needed it to, and so far it's worked well. Siri sometimes has a problem recognizing the command. I think it has something to do with the fact that I have two networks at the house here. And so it depends which network I'm on. So I think that's, I won't blame Apple for that. I'll blame me for being a little too secure. But I've had a lot of the same, things happen, you know, to me as far as usability and, you know, getting used to using things, the home button being haptic now with, I have the 7 Plus. And, you know, that was different. You know, I had to play around with the settings to whether I wanted it real lightly or really super heavy. You know, I finally decided that the default is good enough. But that whole experience is really weird. When I first got the phone, I had to, you know, it got stuck during the formatting thing. And there was nothing out there about how to reboot the phone. And because it's now not a physical button, you know, it's not the same action as it used to be before. And so I had to literally call Apple, and they had to tell me, no, now you have to hold, you know, the right side button, don't know what that's called, and then the volume up button at the same time in order to reboot.
I think it's volume down.
Yeah, sleep, wake, and volume down. So that's but I didn't know that, and there had been nothing written about it. So it was one of those, okay, thank goodness Apple Care was able to take care of me.
You know what else I don't like about that? Is if you're on the springboard or you're on an active screen, when you do that gesture, it starts like cranking the volume down, right? And you got to wait for it to like it doesn't disable.
Yeah.
It doesn't disable like the volume down button. The volume down button is still like operating while you're doing that gesture. It's really weird. I'm hoping that's something they can fix in software, but I've kind of gotten in the habit of trying to make sure like I'm on the lock screen before I do a reboot now, if I can. But I mean, sometimes you're just stuck wherever you're stuck at. So I understand why they had to do it, but yeah, another one of those little quirky, weird things. So I think Kelly mentioned messages already. But what do you guys think about that? I'm not this huge like messaging person, but I have to admit in my family,
wow,
like all of the message stuff has become hugely popular. But you know, I have three women who are using it, you know, and my daughters and my wife, and it's my daughters who are really like into it. You know, there's like stickers flying back and forth in our family messages all the time. And they get really upset if I mess with their stickers, which I love to do, like put googly eyes on their sticker, you know, or funny hats.
Yeah. 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 Mm-hmm.
That doesn't go over well either. I think it's hilarious though.
I think it's a blast. I mean, it's fun to do it, you know, like just with some friends or with my wife, and, you know, so that's really great. But then when it really goes to the next step for me, I mean, just practicality, is being able to do things like take pictures and annotate them on the fly. You know, being able to turn sideways and do some handwriting. I mean, that really takes it to a next level now, when we're not just having fun, but we're really trying to get an idea across in real time with something like a picture. And being able to have those controls instantly available to you, and instantly be able to annotate something, you know, on the fly like that, that is wonderful. And I can't wait till, you know, some of that stuff comes, you know, to Mac OS. That'll be great. It's the only right now, but those are powerful features. So yeah, I think that they're hitting the ball out of the park when it comes to, you know, these kids these days. But then it also has a lot of applications for, you know, the rest of us.
Right. What about you, Kelly? Are you a messages person, or do you use some other app? 'Cause I know.
Oh my gosh, I'm such a messages person.
Yeah, me too.
Like I pulled the phone app out of the dock and put messages there instead.
Wow. Like,
there you go.
I'm serious.
It's actually not a bad idea.
I already have messages down there and phone,
but just the idea of pulling. I never thought about pulling phone out of the dock, but I use it so infrequently.
Like, I sat down and went.
Right.
Yeah, I sat down and looked at it like one day and went, you know, I was like, it was one of those days where I just sort of felt like shaking it up, and I'd gotten some new app or something, and I wanted to make sure that I used it. So usually what I do when I'm doing that is I want to make sure it's on the front screen or something. And I had this idea about like shaking some things up. And then, it wasn't too long after I got my 6S. And because before that I had a 5S. So I went to, you know, the next size up phone, and I went, messages is way the heck up here. I can never hit it with my thumb. This is dumb. What can I do to fix that? And then I was like, well, here, I like the other stuff that I have where my thumb can reach it, where it can be reached, because I really overthink my home screen layout. And like, to the point that there's stuff that if I use it in the car, I make sure it's on the other side, because I always pick my phone up with my right hand in the car because it's sitting in the cup holder. And the rest of the time I'm using my phone in my left hand. So the stuff I want to use when I'm not in the car goes down the left hand side of the screen. Like, I way overthink it.
No, I don't. It's funny you're saying that. I don't think you do. And now I'm curious, because I did exactly the same thing. Like, I have laid out my phone where all the stuff that I use most frequently, it goes from the bottom left, bottom right-hand corner up, right? The most frequently used stuff's in the bottom right-hand corner because I'm right-handed. So my thumb, that's where my thumb naturally wants to fall, is that sort of lower right section. And then everything kind of goes up from there. And it's that, you know, those first four squares are the most common things. You know, I have some folders there, but the point is that that's where you want the things, right? Because that's where you can easily tap them and reach them one-handed. I'm totally with you. Victor, do you use something similar with your layouts?
Absolutely the same type of method, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, positioning is everything. You know, frequency is definitely determines positioning. So there is definitely a hierarchy. And then there is the stepchildren too.
So, like one thing that, now I don't even remember what we were talking about because I got all defensive about my layout.
Your icon layout. Yeah, we were.
It was pulling messages out of the dock.
Yeah.
That's what it was. And I sat down and started thinking about it and went, well, what can I do? And then I sat down, and I always talk on podcasts and things about being technologically honest with yourself. You know, like people who think, oh, well, I have to have a computer, you know, and then if they sit down and they're really honest with themselves, like I look at Facebook, I look at my email, I do some basic online banking, online bill pay sorts of things. And, you know, I like to play this game, or I like to, you know, this one particular, or read a lot of books. You know, I have a Kindle, so I'm going to get a Kindle app. Like, if that's really all you're doing with a computer, you could be very happy with an iPad and be done with having to have a computer. So I was technologically honest with myself and went, really, whenever I'm on the phone, on my phone, it's usually because somebody called me.
Right.
So the few times I actually need to call somebody, it's not really an inconvenience if I stick this up here where I don't need to really reach it. And that's been great. And I'm going to talk about the phone app for a second, because one thing I really do like is that the force touch in the app, in the phone app, is very cool now, because it's got the row of favorites across the top, which is what you had initially in iOS 9. If you force touch the phone app, it would show you your top, I think, 3 or maybe 4 favorites on your favorites list. And then now it gives you other options when you press on the phone app. And I think that that's very cool. And I like how they've laid it out. You can view calls or search for a contact or view a voicemail. And I really like how they have that laid out in iOS 10. So that's one of the things that happened that I'm really excited about. And also, I'm excited about the 7, even though I don't have one, because it means that now the current generation and one generation back have 3D touch.
Right.
So lots more stuff is 3D touch. People are building cool interactions with their apps into apps that are going in the App Store. And updates are coming that make it very interesting to use and cool to use. And so if you have apps that you use regularly that are, you know, and you have this new phone, like, try pressing on those a little bit. And the tip I would give for people who are not used to force touch is adjust the setting. Cause I think I set mine to, like, you have to press heavy because I was getting lots, like, I was trying to delete apps all the time when I first got it.
Yeah. You were doing the light touch. Yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't registering my press. And so now I think, or maybe it's set to light by default. And so I upped it a notch to medium or something. But whatever it was, like, I went in and tweaked that setting. And so now it actually does what I wanted to do. And that was the thing that I cleared up that made it a lot more fun to use 3D touch. So I totally suggest it. And I'm really excited to see what else people do with 3D touch.
I'm so 3D touch deficient. You know
Adam, I was that way. Like Kelly said, I started to try out apps that I really like and started just like pushing the button after they updated. I didn't mean to interrupt you. And all of a sudden I warmed up to it. And now I'm using it. It may not be with everything, but the apps that I really love, I'm using it. So I get what you're saying.
But I mean, you know, I think part of it is it's sort of like keyboard shortcuts, right? For apps. I know I want to use them, but I forget to use them. I don't use them. And a big reason I think I don't use them is because I also start to forget which ones and which things work where and with what apps, if that makes any sense. Mm-hmm. So, like, yeah. I know, like, you know, I use Spark for my email, and it, not only can you, you know, 3D touch on the icon, but you can 3D touch on your message list and bring up all kinds of options and things like that. And I forget, oh, yeah, I can do forwarding and archiving, and, you know, I can force press and then slide up on the thing, or I can, you know, or peak. I guess that's peak and pop, right? I forget all the peak about pop, all the peak gestures or the pop gestures that are going on. You know, and like there's like handy ones for that. In messages.
I'm pretty peak and pop deficient myself. Like, it happens to me sometimes on accident because I forget that that's a thing that I can do.
Agreed.
Yeah. But like, Adam, the one I will tell you is go in and rejigger your favorites list so that the people you call the most are at the top, and then try to remind yourself to use Force Touch on the phone app.
Yeah, I saw
that. And once
that.
You get that tip. Going, once you get that going, then at least that's like one where you can sort of develop that habit, and then you might find that you're doing it in other stuff. The two that reeled me in were the phone app when I figured that one out. But that wasn't what actually did it for me. It was camera, because I take all the pictures all the time on my phone. The force touch on the camera and the force touch on messages, because messages will do the same thing. It's got some sort of algorithm, and it'll pick like the 3 people you text the most during that particular time of the day, or the 3 people that you text the most in general, or something. There's a whole bunch of like factors that go into it. So if you normally, say you text your wife at lunchtime every day, then even if you've been texting with a bunch of other people, once it gets to be lunchtime, when you force touch on the messages icon, it will bring her up as one of the suggested people you can send a message to.
You know, can I go back to the phone app for a second? Because one of the things that I'm really loving on it, and that saved my skin the other day, is the new voicemail transcription service, which is beta, and they're looking for, you know, so if you use it, do give them feedback. But this thing is fantastic. You know, I needed a voicemail that came in that had to do with something with my trip to Cuba. And I needed to provide some evidence from this phone call from the State Department to another, to the Immigration Department. And I was able to take both, you know, the call itself by using the share button and share it out as an MP3 to my cloud so that I could attach that to the email to them. So that's one. Awesome. And two, I was able then to take the transcription and also bring that in as text, you know, and then, you know, I corrected a couple of things that it had missed, but just having that there and not having to listen to this 4-minute message and transcribe it myself was really, really good. So now, is I'm waiting to see if when my mom calls me and leaves me a message in Spanish, if it'll actually translate it.
Yeah.
I bet it will, because I'll tell you what, when I'm using dictation on the phone these days, if I'm writing in Spanish instead of English, it absolutely catches all of my dictation stuff in Spanish perfectly well. It just knows how to differentiate when I'm speaking Spanish versus when I'm speaking English. And it does a really good job of that. So bottom line is that, I don't know if you knew that, but it absolutely. Now, I don't speak emoji yet, so it doesn't do that.
No.
But Spanish and English, it can do.
I didn't know, and maybe this has always been there, but that you just mentioned, I didn't know that you could hit the share button and actually save out the audio from your from your voicemail calls.
I'm not entirely certain you could even do that in 9. So if you could do it in 9, it was new to 9, because I remember having to try to help people with that in 8 and not having a really good way to do so.
Because I mean, I've used iMazing more recently, and prior to that, like the Ecamm, you know, it's called iPhone Explorer, not iPhone Explorer. You know what I'm talking about?
The one I used before, Adam.
iPhone View, I think they changed it too.
Just in the same spirit as Kelly was saying around, 3D Touch, it's like more and more these days, I am using the share button to see what it can do. And there's gold in them hills. I mean, you know, just being able to do PDFs now, you know, on the fly, you can save anything to a PDF right from the OS, you know, directly.
Okay.
And that's pretty cool. You don't need a third-party app anymore to do that.
Can we talk about how Apple has implemented that, though, and how convoluted it is?
It is convoluted.
Like, why am I not tapping, you know, share, print, and then it just says, like, there's a button that says saved PDF, right?
Right.
There's not. Yeah. So, for people who don't know, the way this works is in any app that can do printing, the way you get a PDF out is you tap the share button. You swipe over to find the print option. Then on the print screen, it will give you kind of this little, it looks like a preview down at the bottom. And then you force press on that. And if you don't have force press, this is another good tip. Dave Hamilton told me this. If you don't have force press, you can pinch. You do the pinch to zoom to expand it up.
Okay.
That's cool.
So if you don't have a 3D Touch phone, and then what that gives you is that gives you a full view of the document, which I'm assuming at that point that's like a little preview PDF. And there's another share button on that screen. You tap that share button. So now we've had to hit the share button twice, and then that will bring up all of your like document locations, so you can make a copy of it to paste someplace else. You can add it to iCloud Drive. You can attach it to an email. You can send it to your Dropbox, your box.net, you know, whatever you have
in terms of
document, things that can handle documents or PDFs, you can send that off to. But it's like, really? Like, how is anybody supposed to find that?
I would not have been surprised if you had said, and then once you tap this button, a wizard will appear and you have to give him the password. And then the wizard has a friend, and that friend totally knows a guy.
Right. You know, this is an instance where they took, you know, a workflow from Mac OS,
right,
you know, that we do all the time, you know, file, print, you know, and then preview, save to PDF, lower left-hand corner. Right. You know, they took that workflow, which is also convoluted in Mac OS, by the
way. Well, not anymore, though.
Yeah.
See, that's the thing, is they fixed it in Mac OS. In El Capitan, they added file, export as PDF.
That's correct. But before, I mean, so yeah, I'm, right. My point is that they took that old thing and it's like, ooh, you guys are still behind the times. Let's get with it and look at how, you know, PDF Pen is doing it. There's a great implementation of it. You know, why don't you follow the yellow brick road on that? You know, that
well,
kind
how
of
about, how about, you know, mm-hmm. share, print, or share, export as PDF.
PDF. That's right. That's right. Yep. Yep.
Just weird. I mean, some of the decisions, and it goes back to what we were talking a little bit about earlier about, you know, the discoverability of some of these features. But I'm with you, Victor, on you know, like the print to PDF and the markup in notes and all that stuff is kind of awesome. Another one of those discoverability things that a lot of people have missed is like lyrics in the music app, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And again, the visual cues that you always need to look for are like those little handles, right? So when you pull up, would you call those things cards? So
cards.
Music now, yeah. The music player is on a card. So when you're playing music, you've got the little bar at the bottom, and when you tap on that or you pull it up, then you get the card. And if you swipe up on the card a little bit more, then it reveals lyrics, which is kind of cool. Yeah.
Yep. Yep. And so I think that, like, the point that to bring home, Kelly started, is that, you know, we have this new shiny OS, and it really is worthwhile, just like on your Mac, to go in and press all the buttons and do the command this and the command that. There's magic in them hills, and we're never going to find it. You know, and just, like, take a day and learn some of that stuff. And it really can be, it can help your workflow so much, because a lot of us, when we have these problems, we go after an application that's going to solve that problem for us. When these days in the OS, because of the integration, a lot of that stuff is kind of either built in or it's already been integrated to an application you already use.
Right. Right. Yeah. Sorry. Do you have one more thing to add, Kelly?
No, I was going to try and be really smooth about, like, I'm totally a person who upgrades my phone pretty early in the process, but I totally don't upgrade my computer. So Victor said, like Mac OS, but I'm going to disagree with him, at least at my house, because I don't do that. So that was all, and I was going to shift gears to Mac OS for
Mac
you.
OS.
But.
Yeah.
But even a lot of people in OS X haven't done that in a long time. You know, they haven't gone, just simply go to the help and start looking at the help file. And there's literally, I keep saying this, there's really gold in there. And you can find an application that you used to think was boring, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, wow, it can do all of these cool things. So, anyways.
You mean like Preview?
And
well, like Preview, but there are many others, right, Adam? Preview is just one example. The text editor is another one that people just don't recognize. But any application, especially if you just go to the help files and read them, they've laid those out in a way that lets you discover this stuff pretty easily. You know, I mean, iMovie. Oh, my God, the updates to iMovie recently. I don't mean to get off the tangent, but incredible.
We can move on to Mac OS
new.
And Mac apps,
you know,
and stuff like that.
Yeah, well, and Adam, before we do that, can I say one more thing about iOS 10 and about iPhone 7. I don't know if you're going to go to iPhone 7 separately.
I think we can hit iPhone 7 real quick before we move on to Mac, because I don't know that we have a lot to say there. So yeah, go ahead.
So let me just say it, because it revolves around photography, which is one of my passions. And I just have to say that both on iOS 10 and, of course, now with iPhone 7, the ability to shoot raw pictures in your phone is now in there.
Right.
Not all the developers have taken advantage of it. They will. Apple itself on the camera app, you cannot shoot raw there. But for now, let me just direct you to Lightroom, which has the ability to shoot raw. And oh my goodness, the difference that it makes in the quality of your pictures, in the details, shadows, etc., is amazing. And then take that up, you know, another level when you have the iPhone 7 Plus with the 2X lens. Oh. That lens using RAW is, I just can't believe what they're getting out of that sensor, to be quite honest with you, when you shoot RAW with that sensor. It's spectacular. And then, you know, from Lightroom, if you don't want to develop it there, you can use, you know, something else in order to do that. My favorite editing app is Snapseed. So, you know, for now, I'm shooting it RAW on Lightroom, bring it into Snapseed and do all the magic. And, you know, I can do things on this phone now that, you know, I wasn't able to do 5 years ago on the Mac very easily.
So you like Lightroom directly as the camera, huh?
Just right now, because everybody else hasn't integrated it.
Have you tried Camera Pro?
I haven't tried Camera Pro.
Because I always thought that that Camera Plus...
I usually use manual.
Yeah.
That's what I usually use, and I don't know if they've integrated it yet. If they've sent me an update in the last day or two, then maybe they have.
Yeah, I think I saw that iMore was testing with Camera Pro, and so that was kind of the one that I picked up. I think it's only like $4.99. And it does RAW, and it has all the exposure controls and all kinds of settings. And it's pretty straightforward, you know, so you can do like shutter priority and all that stuff. Yeah.
So let me make a correction. Yes. Now, you know, definitely the one I shoot with normally manual, you can save as RAW. And I absolutely love manual. It's just what it says, folks. So everything's manual, but it is the closest thing that I have to actually having, you know, a camera when I really want to compose something. You know, I can control all the parameters from it. And now if it saves RAW, then I'm good to go.
So even on my olden 6S, I can use manual to try to take a better photo?
Yes. Yeah, okay. The only thing you won't be able to take advantage of if you don't have a 7 Plus is that second 2X lens, which just gives you that extra... oomph when it comes to detail and shadows and so on. Really, I mean, we've come such a long way in the whole photography field in these phones that it's amazing.
And I'll be honest, I can't get over, even still, having had my phone for a year, I cannot get over the low light ability that I have in the camera on my 6S. And I can't even imagine what it's like in a 7.
You know, but, yeah. Can we talk about that a little bit, maybe?
Sure.
Because, you know, I had a 6S and I moved to a 7. And right when I got it, I mean, one of the big things that I wanted to check out was the camera. And what I found is that, and I think I commented on this on my show in the past, but I'll bring it back up because I think it's important. And I want to get your guys' take on it, especially yours, Victor, since you have the 7 Plus. The camera enhancements are nice. They're good. There's nothing wrong with them. But Kelly, to your point, the low light is better, but I don't know that it's astronomically better, if that makes any sense. And I don't know what your experience has been as Victor, but I tried a couple shots. There's a little more detail in some areas. I think the color accuracy is better, but some of that might be due to the P3 or whatever 3 color gamut that's in the iPhone 7 screen, right? The iPhone 7 screen is the display.
The better color gamut, right. Yeah. Right.
So I think some of that's attributed to that. But overall, you know, I was like, okay, this is maybe, it feels like a 20% improvement over the 6S camera. Not like a whole new camera. And I guess I was maybe expecting more, but I don't know why.
And this is where, Adam, I recommend that you're shooting with a 7 right now?
Yeah.
Okay, so I definitely recommend that you shoot in RAW. You know, and then bring that into, you know, your desktop on Lightroom or something. And so shoot a picture without it, regular, and then shoot a picture in RAW. And you'll see much, much more bang for the buck, even with the 7, than you're seeing with the, you know, I mean, Apple's doing a pretty good job with the JPEGs to get out of them what they can with their algorithm. But when you have in RAW the ability to really squeeze more out, you'll see that you really, really can. And again, if you have a 7 Plus, the 2X camera just brings it to a whole other level because you've got, you know, that much more, you know, detail in order to deal with. And so it's really a good way to do that, that particular function. Also, if you have a 7 Plus, the 2X camera and shooting video is spectacular, A. And B, if you shoot video and you're going to be doing a lot of panning, which, you know, or you want just better motion. So the thing that I do for that is, and I put out a video just the other day, is I shoot in slow motion mode, the video in slow motion mode, you know, and then I do my pan faster than I normally would, you know, and then when I bring it back into iMovie, either on the phone or on iOS or on the Mac, then you can then use the speed adjustment there to make it faster, and your zooms will be much, much smoother than they are just with image stabilization, especially if you don't have image stabilization. So that's a pretty good hint for everybody to go out and at least try, because it really does work.
So when I do like every other phone at my house. So my husband does like the other one. So he is on the evolution track, the revolution track, and I am on the evolution track. Mm-hmm. So he's still debating whether or not he wants a 7. He has a 6. And one for me, going from the 5S camera to the 6S camera was the biggest jump that I have made. To me, hands down, in the quality of the camera. I was excited about the 5S and its ability to take better pictures and the video quality when you shoot video on the 5S, like the slow-mo and things like that. That was all neat, and I was excited that it had been upgraded, because that's usually what I look forward to whenever I get a new phone. Is first is whatever the new whatever new things have happened in the last two generations, because I skipped the one before. So, you know, when the 7S comes out, whatever that camera is going to be really exciting to me. And then below that is going to be the other stuff. Like, last fall when I got my phone, I was, you know, super I was not even fashionably late to the Apple Pay party. You know, I was able to bonk my phone on stuff and pay for it, and it was awesome. And like all that other stuff is sort of secondary to the camera, because I use the camera on my phone so much. And I feel like the 5S camera to the 6S camera was the most dramatic leap I've made yet. So I had a 3G, and then I had a 4, and then I had a 4S, and then I had a 5S, and then now I have a 6S. And from the 5S to the 6S, I feel like that was huge. And I don't know what the difference was in those two generations, you know, from the 5S to the 6 and then the 6 to the 6S. I don't know what they did, but whatever that was, I feel like that was the leap, you know, whichever step that was. I feel like that was the leap where it fundamentally became a camera where I have a point and shoot that I don't need to bring with me anymore.
Mm-hmm. And I agree with you that from the 6S to the 7, by itself, it was not as big of a leap as the one you just talked about, Kelly. Without a doubt, it isn't. I think it is if you go to this 7 Plus, because of the dual lenses and because of the portrait mode. But from 6S to 7, not so much. You're going to get just as big as bang for the buck, in this man's opinion, if you're using a 6S and you shoot RAW. You're going to get exactly the same kind of quality, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think you're probably pretty close on that. I think overall, I mean, just to finish up the iPhone stuff, I mean, I think in general, we're for most people, we're past the days of needing every upgrade. You know,
I
think, and even Apple, I think, is recognizing that with how they're rolling out features, that, you know, people are going to be more likely upgrading phones every 2, maybe even every 3 years, depending upon the kind of phone person you are. You know, I'm the person who's always going to have the latest and greatest, but that's never going to change. That's just because that's how I am. And there'll always be those of us out there. But I think, you know, there are a lot of people who sort of felt like they want to upgrade. And I've talked to a lot of people in this release who I know have been every year upgraders for a while. And there more of them are opting like you are, Kelly, just like skip and go, you know what, I'm going to jump this, you know, I'm going to wait for the next one, so that I can have a little bit of a bigger improvement in some of these features.
I think part of that is just that as a whole, they're getting more mature. And so the things that you can add to a phone at this point aren't necessarily as dramatic. You know, remember when getting a phone that could shoot video was revolutionary, and getting a phone that you could talk to when you weren't on a call was revolutionary. And getting a phone that you can bonk on the thing at the store and buy stuff was revolutionary. But those weren't 1 year, the next year, the next year. Like, those came out over time. And I think part of why those sorts of headline features come out that way is because they're, you know, it's happening less now, but it used to be a 2 year upgrade cycle. You were chained to that thing for 2 years. So even if you wanted Apple Pay when the 6 came out, you know, you were stuck until next June or whatever. And I think that there's still a certain amount of that happening, but I also don't know how often Apple is going to be able to fundamentally change the things that we do with our phone every single September. Like, right. I just don't see that happening. Right. So, and that's part of why I sort of like skipping, because I like the opportunity to get, you know, a bunch of upgrades at the same time. But I also like to see, just from a software standpoint, what Apple's really doing. And I don't know that I've ever been disappointed with the iOS upgrade, you know, on last year's phone, which is basically what I have now is last year's phone.
Right.
You know, making that upgrade, like, I still feel like I get quite a bit out of that. You know, the Raise to Wake, like I said, is really great. Improvements in the way some of the other things are handled is really great. I like, you know, I like the Force Touch stuff that's happening, and making those things happen, I think, is really also really where a lot of innovation is coming from. And I don't know that all of that necessarily gets its due, because it gets sort of tied up in, you know, can you do that because you have a new phone, or can you do that because you have a new OS?
Right.
And, you know, right. Lots of people just talk about it being the iPhone 7, you know, and I'm like, but I get all this cool stuff on my phone too, and I didn't get a new one.
Right.
And I think that's something right. that sometimes gets overlooked. So if you have a 6S and you have, you know, you have new phone fever, just go update it and it'll feel new and different anyway.
Yeah, I think you're right.
You're right. Go play. Yeah.
Well, and I think that's a good kind of transition too into the Macs, because I mean, that's sort of what's been happening on the Mac for a couple of years now too. I mean, people are complaining that we're not getting new Mac hardware maybe as quickly as they want. But if you look at the last, at least for me, the last couple of Mac OS updates, every time I install one, some of the new features, it's not, you know, revolutionary new things, but all the nice little enhancements to me make the operating system and make the experience feel new. And I don't know if you guys have felt the same way.
Tightening
that's
bolts.
Right. That's right.
Tightening bolts and refining, I think, because, you know, we did see a lot of, you know, I'm sure you guys can agree with me on this, since the advent of OS 10, you know, we got the new thing in every update for a lot of years, you know, the dashboard, you know, was one of those things. And the brushed metal, and then, like, the, you know, the pinstripes went away, and you know, all the different sorts of interaction features that we got, you know, as OS 10 has evolved,
right.
Like, each of those interaction changes, you know, was sort of great, but sometimes, like, sort of terrible. And so so seeing that Apple has sort of stepped back from that and done a little bit more, you know, this time we got Siri on your Mac.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, things like that, I think, is a big deal, but it's one big deal. It's not one of, like, 107 big deals, which is what we used to get from Apple. You know, but here's the 96 things that are all brand new in the operating system, and we don't even have time to talk to you about all of them. You just have to go find them for yourself by freeze framing this video later and looking at the list behind me on the slide.
Right.
And that used to be the way. And some of it was sort of lame, and some of it was new, and you wanted it to be awesome, and it was broken. And it got kind of frustrating for a while, and I'm really glad that Apple has sort of recalibrated that vision to, why don't we take what we have and refine it?
Yeah.
And I much prefer this approach. It makes me a lot happier.
Well, I guess I'm having a pain point at this point, because I think there, you know, you mentioned Siri as being in macOS Sierra. I mean, that's, I'm becoming a Siri addict, And mm-hmm. I use it on my iOS devices all the time, and I rely on it a lot. And the ability to have that, especially like some of the universal searching features or the AI kind of things that Apple is integrating in mm-hmm. with that, to me would be like a big deal. You know, if I'm working on a web development project, there's very often when I need to find like images for something, and to be able to pull that up in a Siri window and drag those in just as placeholders, you know, just as comp stuff as I'm trying to figure things out, would be really handy. Things like the universal clipboard, I'm like, I really want to use that. But so where my dilemma is like, there's a lot of great stuff in there. I want this new operating system, but I never upgrade right away. I'm usually like a couple months out.
Oh, I'm a chicken.
Operating my system. Well, I always have active projects going on. Like I have three or four critical projects that like I can't break away from to kind of do the due diligence of making sure all my backups are set and, you know, to just run the update. And then two, there's always those little edge cases. And especially for me, it's a lot of the terminal based stuff. Like I run, because I'm a web developer, I have, you know, like GitHub running, and I've got Git running, and I've got all these low level, you know, Apache server and MySQL servers. And it's like, inevitably, every time I upgrade, something in one of those areas is going to get stomped on.
So I have two reasons why I don't upgrade day and date. The first reason is that I have been using a computer for most of my life. And so because technology, so in the old days, and I know I'm like the three of us may be the only people who remember this anymore. In the olden days, when you had to upgrade like from floppies, you know, before CDs were a common thing, or when you could get a CD, but it was like, you know, $199 or $129, you know, to upgrade those. When you used to have to do that, you know, you would find out about problems, you know, slower, of course, than you do now because of Twitter and things. So I always wait. In the old days, I used to wait a couple of weeks to make sure that like the regular folks that I talk to, because I've kind of always like kept pretty nerdly circles, I guess, for most of my life. So I would keep an ear out for like, oh yeah, you know, it totally bricked my PowerBook, or it completely thrashed my big gumdrop iMac. Like I have to hold off on that. You know, in the old days, I used to wait because I wanted to make sure I wasn't going to have a problem, because generally I only ever have one computer. So I can't just like, well, worst case, I can go work on my other machine for a while until I get this sorted out on my real computer. I only ever had my real computer. So I didn't have an option. You know, like all I could really do was be down until I got it fixed. So I always made sure I didn't ever have to fix it. Right. So I used to hold off on that. I still hold off. Because that's a habit that has served me very well in years past. So I do sort of wait and see how things are actually working for regular people who are doing these sorts of upgrades. The two things I would recommend to people who are looking at any OS upgrade ever at all, and not because you should listen to crazy old superstitious Kelly, but because it's a good idea, is to check out roaringapps.com to make sure that the stuff that you use on your computer, whether it's because you rely on it or because you make money from it, make sure that stuff is compatible before you pull the trigger on the upgrade. Mm-hmm. And also make sure that you have at least one backup that's 100% solid.
Yep.
The best practice for backups always, you know, is two backups, one on site, one offsite. You know, if you can extend that even further, you know, power to you. If you're a three backup person, like, you're fantastic, and I love you and your belt and your suspenders, you know. but like, you really want to make sure that that stuff is legitimate, because in case something does go wrong, you're covered, and that's just good practice anyway, because if something bad happens to your computer through no fault of your own, you can end up like, I have a developer friend who called me the other day and said, hey, do you still have that really awesome screwdriver set? And I'm like, yeah, what do you need? And they're like, yeah, I broke my rule about not setting water on the same surface my computer's on. And like, this was literally 2 weeks ago. So it's still a thing that happens. And, you know, on the upside, because of Sierra coming and everything, like all the backups were rock solid and up to date. So it was like, well, worst case, like I can put this on my backup machine and I can be up and running, you know, tomorrow morning. So that's like a super important thing, I think, to mention. But the reason I wait mostly now is because I do a lot of podcasting, like with you guys right now. And the audio stuff gets funny in a hurry. Yep. So I always sort of wait. And so honestly, when I'm listening now, what I'm doing is I'm listening to Victor. Have you upgraded your production machine? Adam, have you, as we record this on International Podcast Day, like those are the people I'm looking for.
Right.
Have you upgraded your daily driver to the new OS yet? Because if you guys have done it, and I know you guys have way more complicated setups than I do. So if you guys have done it and it's solid and you're working, then I know I can pull the trigger.
See, I know people.
I know that you haven't.
I know people who do that, though. You know, I work with the guys at TMO and, you know, like they'll upgrade like day one. It's like, you guys are nuts. Like that just scares.
No. They upgraded before. They're
right, exactly.
All like running beta something or other, and
but
Adam
on,
and I
but
are
on their
like
production machines, not extra machines. Like I will, and I haven't even done this yet. I have a 13-inch MacBook Air, like a 2011, and I will definitely upgrade that probably in the next week or two, just so I can start playing around with this stuff, so I can talk about it on the podcast. But that's not my machine. The only reason I've hesitated on that one this time around is because that's kind of my daughter has adopted that as her school machine. And I know she's going to be mad at me when it changes because they don't like change. But I don't expect anything to break on it. I don't think she's going to have any problems with it because she just uses pages and numbers and all those sorts of things. So I know those are going to continue to work. But Victor, I mean, you're kind of in that boat too, right? I mean, you've been doing all this audio stuff. And I, like Kelly was saying, I know audio gets really kind of scary. That's one of those areas, especially if you have like outboard gear, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So let me talk about that for a minute, because I definitely am in that boat. And right now, the album's finished, so I don't need both my production machines. Normally, my MacBook Pro plus my iMac would be production machines, and I would not even think, like you guys have already stated, about upgrading because of audio stuff. Just infamous audio companies that make audio interfaces, audio plugins, you know, companies like Adobe, you know, in their audio world. And sure enough, there are plenty of alerts out there telling everybody, don't do it. You know, XYZ company is not ready. And all of these came about, and I got all those this time as well. My main interface right now is made by a company called Universal Audio. You know, and they put out a thing saying it doesn't work at all. You will not be able to use it, and et cetera. So I did a little bit of digging, and you know, the interwebs, there's a lot of very smart people. And there was an article about a potential workaround that might be able to fix these issues. At least it fixed it for quite a few users in this forum. Mm-hmm. And so I decided to take one for the team on my MacBook Pro. And I installed Sierra on there, a Mac OS on there. And sure enough, when I came back up, nope, audio interface wouldn't work. My plugins weren't working, you know, just as expected. So it was like, okay, that's the warning there. However, I was able to find that if I applied this method, which was basically, and Adam, I'll give you a link to this, was basically changing the configuration system integrity protection part of the system.
Yeah,
exactly.
I don't mess with that.
Which is very dangerous, right? And normally I would not tell anybody to mess with it. But I, again, decided to take one for the team because this machine at this point was, you know, if I had to rebuild it, it's okay. So, yeah, sure enough, pretty easy to do, you know, basically a terminal command. And what's happened here, you guys, is that they basically have taken security configurations and they're now stored in MVRAM rather than in the file system itself. And so predictably, you know, all these developers that make these plugins and this hardware, they just have to change their stuff to point the stuff to the right place.
The right places, and yeah.
Exactly. And so sure enough, when I did this on the machine and then brought it back up, it works perfectly. No more problems. All my audio gear worked. Well, all of my plugins worked. There was no taxing to the system, you know, at all. You know, so definitely a workaround, not for the faint of heart. But I wanted to prove the point that, okay, this is the root cause to this. Now,
so
I don't think it excuses the developers of this hardware and software to wait until the OS actually comes out to put the fix. That's ridiculous.
That's
in my
the
book.
Frustrating thing is that they've had a long time to deal with, you know, to know what's going on, to be aware of the changes that Apple's making from a security standpoint. But you're absolutely right. So just people know what you're talking about. Basically, this is stuff that falls under the general umbrella of what Apple calls Gatekeeper, which is the level of the operating system that's designed to protect you from like being hacked. And they keep every new OS iteration, they lock more and more things down and tell developers, okay, here is the areas where you can stick your stuff, but you cannot put your stuff in these system level areas anymore. And that's what's not being updated. So when they when you find a workaround that says, oh, go turn off system integrity protection, and I'm assuming, Victor, that also in your instructions was turn it back on. Basically, most of these things that I've seen, what they tell you to do is, okay, turn it off. Here's how you turn it off. You run like a terminal command. It turns it off. Then you run your installers or do whatever you want, because at that point, the app can go in and install all of its low-level stuff in the system folders where it's not supposed to put things anymore, but now it can. So once they're all in there, it's not going to take them back out. Then you turn system integrity protection back on, and everything runs because it's going to look for, you know, libraries that it installed at a system level, and they're going to be there. You know, it's very similar to the fix. You know, we as podcasters use Levelator, and Levelator just hasn't been updated. It hasn't been in active development. So when I think it was right. El Capitan or Yosemite, I can't remember. I think it was Yosemite.
It was El Cap, I think.
Yeah, one of those, this is exactly what happened, and it was sort of like, oh, okay, well, if you just go move this to the right location, and here's, you know, someone put up instructions, put this resource in the approved location, and then go in and hack the, you know, I think you hack the plist, or you basically tell the software, okay, this is where you need to look for this library now, then everything ran fine, and you didn't have to, and that's basically mm-hmm. what developers need to do, is they need to rewrite their applications to write those libraries and write those supporting files into the approved safe locations now, and not put them
right
out at the system level.
Right. And the CSR utility can't even be run unless you're in unless you boot to the recovery OS.
Right.
So it and that's for safety again. So this is a very intentional act, you know, both on the way in and on the way out. And so you have that safety level there. So you have to boot into recovery, then go into terminal from your recovery partition, then do the command, take it out.
Like to me, this is one of those things that I would tell most people, this is not worth it, because you're messing with a very deliberate level of security that Apple's putting in place for very Correct. Important reasons. You know, look at all the reports of hacks and zero-day exploits, and that's what this is all about. So, you know, that's why I err on the side when I read about stuff like this. And Victor, I think it's great that, you know, you're testing it out. So you're just wanting to learn the technology and understand it. But most users really shouldn't be messing with this. And at this point, you really should kind of step back and go, okay, I'm going to wait on this upgrade because I need these audio plugins, or I need this thing to work. Yeah. And I'm going to, you know, email the developer and just say, look, I would really like you to consider fixing your stuff so that we can upgrade and we can move forward. Cause I'd like to upgrade, but you know, like I would never, anytime I see that, oh, you got to mess with system integrity protection, I've just opted to not
right.
do
and,
it.
And I 200% agree with you. I 200% I'm telling you not to do what I did, but you know, like I said, well, I'm taking one for the team. Yeah. I wanted to make sure, and, you know, I wanted to see what this was doing. Again, this is a machine that's not really used at all. And believe me, I'm going to be taking this away from it, you know, immediately. But so you make a great point, Adam. I think it's just always nice to be able to dig in deep. And at least I understood. So, yeah I think the just point is that for anyone doing. Who's using these things in a production mm-hmm. environment, sit on your hand, for goodness sakes. It's going to be a month. It's going to be 6 weeks. There's nothing you can do today on Mac OS that's so special that, you know, you can't wait.
Yeah.
And so
and particularly if you make money using your machine, if your Mac, whatever Mac we're talking about, if your Mac is a professional tool, put the skids to this right now. Play that. If I had a soundboard, Adam, right now is when I would play that big record scratch noise.
Yeah.
Because you need a hold up. And the reason you need a hold up is because particularly if you know you have a tool that has not been updated in some time, you know, like Adam, you mentioned Levelator, like if you sit down and you're like, I live and die by Levelator, like you should think twice about installing any system upgrade because you don't know if it's going to break the thing that you use to make money. And if it's broken, you know, particularly right now, if there's no update available, if you go to the website for the company that makes the software that you need in order to generate income for yourself, if you go to that site and you can't find any information about Sierra compatibility, send them a note. Are you compatible? And if not now, then when? And when you get back something that says launch terminal and type, maybe you need to look for a different tool.
Gotcha. I agree, Victor,
you were talking about advice and, you know, if you come to me for advice about your computer and I've never asked you a question, you know, I've never come to you for advice about my computer, this is probably not the fix for you. You know, the frustrating thing is when you get a company, and I'm totally going to call them out, Verizon has an older air card, USB stick, 3G modem, and they won't sign the driver for the modem. They won't sign the kernel extension, the kext file that you have to install in order to use it. So it's flat out broken and will not operate on a Mac. And it's been this way for three versions of OS now that Sierra has been
released.
Right,
because you can't install unsigned stuff. Will it not even let you do the workaround?
Oh, you can. Oh, I know the workaround.
Right.
I went tap dancing into the area where angels fear to tread and did it. But even that now is not working in as of LCAP, I think it is. It doesn't work. So
yeah.
And they just it just needs a signature in order to be legit. And Verizon can't be bothered because what they really want to do is sell you a new device. So this happened to me, which is the reason that this is a thing that still irks me to this day, because the amount of crap I had to go through in order to install it before I upgraded my operating system, and I use it so infrequently, I don't have to worry about it that much. And so it became a larger issue when it turned out that not only could I not use it after gyration, I couldn't use it at all. Yeah. So
pay
attention to that kind of stuff and find out and send them a note and, you know, be polite, but send them a note and say, like, I need to know your stance on Sierra compatibility, the end. And they'll tell you either they are or they aren't. And if they aren't, there is absolutely nothing they were doing yesterday that you cannot do today. I know it doesn't seem that way. I know it feels like the world is going to end or something, but you'll be fine. And just wait until you know that when you upgrade, it's going to be really smooth. And don't be the person who emails in and finds out, like, this tool's been discontinued, you know, you're out of luck. Now what do you do?
Yeah. Without going into the nitty gritty, just to kind of drive this point home and point out, I mean, what you've got in Sierra, that the major, like the key features that Apple is highlighting, Siri, awesome, fun, cool, does great stuff, has lots of smarts, would be really neat to do. But again, like you pointed out, Kelly, is it really going to change your workflow all that much? Maybe a little bit, but you know, it's just another way of doing the things that you're already doing. You got universal clipboard,
right?
Mm-hmm. You've got the whole, if you have an Apple Watch, you know, auto unlock your Mac, which has its own like very specific requirements, right? You've got to have two-factor authentication turned on. You've got to be using iCloud, like all these other things, right? That hoops that you're going to have to jump through. And yes, it's a nice little convenience thing, but it's not really going to change your life. And then you have the iCloud drive and storage stuff, which if people listen to my last MacCast, we went through how just convoluted a lot of that stuff is and somewhat scary in some areas. Mm-hmm. I mean, it goes all the way from being sort of some cool stuff for like cleaning up and managing storage all the way down to what do you mean that I'm going to have only copies of some things living in just iCloud?
Yeah.
Like, you mean I don't have, these aren't even on my drive to be backed up by a carbon copy cloner and all these other things that I use? Yeah, I think I'm not going to turn that feature on. So.
Yeah, it's it's not always the best job. They're not always the best at explaining some of that stuff so that at least you understand. And, you know, sometimes, and this has been a failing of Apple's for a long time, sometimes Apple fails to communicate to you the enormity of the explanation.
Like, yeah, the switch that you flip and then suddenly Mm-hmm. Right.
So, and, you know, I mean, we've had this problem with like iTunes phone syncing forever, you know, right. Like it looks like a really dire error message, but in real life, it's not a big deal. And the one that looks really reasonable is the one that says, you know, you may as well feed your phone through a wood chipper. That's how hard I'm going to erase it right now. Cool.
The scare and messages, like, you know, you mean?
Yes. So, and the ones that aren't scary are the ones that are the worst, which is why it's very confusing and why I get a lot of calls when I have family members who plug their computers and their phones into their computers and they go, oh my God, it says, no, it's cool.
It says it's
going to
erase everything on my hard drive. It's going to, you know, get rid of all my contacts in iCloud and I won't be able to access them.
Yeah. It's going to physically delete them from the planet. No, you're okay. You know, like. This has been a failing of Apple for a long time. Like the really calm ones are the ones that are the most terrifying to me. Those are the ones that I spend the most time reading and going over and Googling and trying to understand is the ones that don't look the ones that look innocuous, because those are the ones that'll just screw you up for, you know, a week while you try to bring everything back. So
now,
you gotta
say,
watch those.
I must say that Apple has done a good job. If you go to apple.com/macOS/Sierra, there's a really good page with a lot of really great information. So you're not completely going from blindly. And in the short time that I've been running Sierra, now only a couple of days, you know, I must say Siri integration is awesome. I have not found anything that Siri can't do on the macOS that it, you know, an iOS. And the ability to use Siri as this like spotlight completely gone wild is incredible. Man. You know, show me pictures of mountains, these things that would have been really complex Boolean searches and searches before, you can literally just ask Siri to help you with now on the Mac. And it does it. The new features on photos of the features that have returned is what I really should say. The ability to recognize faces and put geotagging on your photos, and the ability to literally go up to the top right and search for cars or trucks or black dogs and have that little preview right on the right there show you those pictures. The algorithms are using to discover these things are really quite remarkable and mm-hmm. worth looking at when you do decide to upgrade.
Yeah. Now that Apple has all these artificial intelligence people that they've been hiring and these companies that they've been putting together, I think we're seeing just the tip of the iceberg of this stuff between Siri and the stuff that's built into photos and memories and stuff like that.
Right.
I've so far have been blown away. And what's interesting to me is I'm blown away by what I believe to be is probably the first, 5% of this technology that Apple has up their sleeve. Like,
I agree.
If people are wondering what's next, you know, and what the game changers is going to be. And what's great about this is while some of the things are somewhat tied to hardware in terms of the processing and stuff like that, a lot of this stuff, though, is cloud and really software, you know, getting to that point we were talking about earlier. So, I think you're going to see, even though you might have older hardware, you're going to see improvements coming with each new iteration of the operating systems that reap huge benefits to, say, your workflow. And that's what I'm most excited about with, like, Siri on macOS Sierra is, like, how it's probably going to directly impact and change my workflow.
Yeah, that's huge. And being able to use tabs on applications is huge.
Tabs.
You know, things like Pro Tools, where before I basically couldn't have two sessions open. Now I can just have tabs. And it's wonderful. Things like that are really progressive and wonderful.
I'm only laughing because you're saying it's progressive. And I'm sure there's people out there like, we had tabs on Windows or whatever Linux like 5 years ago. Welcome to the future, Apple.
Hey, man, I live in my world. I don't know about yours.
And it's a valid point. It's like, why the hell? Heck, did it take us so long to get tabs? You know, like, why did we have to get to macOS Sierra?
I agree.
Here's the thing about Sierra that I really like. First of all, like I said, the headline feature is Siri. And this is something that is going to be totally foreign to you guys, which is if you used any sort of voice recognition system before Siri, it probably listened to you and it probably more or less understood you. And most voice recognition systems completely choke if you give them a woman's voice. Even mine, as low as it is, does not compute for so many different systems, whether it's any of a wide number, let's say all of any of those, like tell me what you want and I'll direct you to the right person when you call an 800 number. Those don't like me at all. They never have. I'm not sure they ever will. Any of the other stuff that you could do when you could interact with your computer, drag and dictate, didn't recognize my voice back in the day. Any of those other sorts of things where you could use your voice for dictation to your laptop, you know, Dragon's just the one that I think of because I know right. They're the one that comes to mind, but there are other ones that had that. I tried them. Every one of them failed because I'm a woman and I have a female voice. You know, some people apparently disagree, but that's what it is. And Siri totally gets me when I tell Siri stuff. Text my husband about this, text my mom about that. Open this app, tell me the weather. Any of the things that I have ever told Siri to do, I'm at probably an 85 to 95% accuracy rate.
Yeah, I'd say I'm in the same place.
Mm-hmm. And I understand that I'm an American person. You know, I live in the United States, so I have access to, you know, a version of Siri that other countries don't have. And I also understand that living in the Northwest, I don't have a whole lot of accent. So I don't have a very thick Southern or Boston or East Coast, you know, sort of thing that Siri has to try and overcome. And so to me, that was life changing. 4S, being able to let me talk to it was unbelievable. Because to me, that was such a huge game changer. And the dictation on macOS has slowly improved. It always did a decent job for me, but I couldn't do anything. It was like, you know, open text, edit, and right. Hit the button and start talking. So it wasn't opening apps or telling me the time or finding me things or getting the weather, or, you know, any of the stuff that Siri can actually do for you.
Yeah.
And so for me, like Siri is always going to be the most exciting thing. Siri is always going to be the greatest thing because Siri is the first one. Siri is the first, you know, computer interactive thing that listens to me. We have an Echo and the Echo does a very good job for me, but I don't think the Echo could have done that if Siri hadn't been there. Right. And so for me, like, that's always going to be the best part is being able to talk to it and tell it what to do. And, you know, I show my mom stuff once in a while because she has Siri on her iPhone. And, you know, and she will go, oh, it's so hard to type. You know, like, this is why it takes me so long to reply to you. And I'm like, Mom, you don't have to push any of those buttons. Just this one. Yeah, just push the mic and talk to it.
Yep.
You know, and it will totally understand you. And she's like, oh, I talk to those and they never understand me. And I'm like, I know, but try this one. And, you know, and it changed her life. Like my mom, who has arthritis in her hands and feet, texts all the time now because she doesn't have to use her hands in order to do it. And it's great. And I can't wait until she upgrades and gets a phone where she doesn't even have to push the button in the first place. And she can just say, text my daughter. You know, da 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 da. Did you see what happened on Days of Our Lives today? I'm writing another letter or whatever it is and making that happen. And to me, that so, you know, Adam, you're talking about like what's coming down the pipe for Siri and what Siri is going to be able to do for you. And I'm still back, honestly, at Siri does anything when I talk. And that's amazing.
Right.
Yeah.
So. You know, like if you haven't spent a lot of time with it, you should spend a little time with Siri because really, like, I find the stuff that I like the best that it does is like the least exciting.
Yeah.
You know, I don't find it particular. You know, like it's awesome that it'll get me the weather. But like if I'm washing dishes or in the middle of something else and I'm able to not only find out who just texted me, I can find out what they said and I can reply and I can be at the other end of the kitchen counter because my phone's sitting on the far end of the counter and I'm washing dishes and I can go, oh, hey, reply to that message and say da 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 da. And I'm like up to date and current. And, you know, if it was something important, I'm able to handle it without ever having to pick up my phone. So, and I think that like the boring little stuff like that, that I do like 100 times a day is really great.
Yeah, you're leading me right into, I think, the last thing that I want to finish up talking to you guys about, and then we'll do some picks, I think. And that is, again, getting back to the AI, and you know, like everybody's wondering what's next for Apple. And between the augmented reality, virtual reality, and artificial intelligence or machine learning, I think really the closest thing is going to be this machine learning. And we heard about what is being called, I think, Invisible Hand, a project inside Apple. I really think we're starting to see the beginnings of moving to a screenless interface, right? Apple is looking at, okay, what happens with computers? What happens with our technology? And that exact scenario that you were describing, Kelly, right? You're talking mm-hmm. about it at today's level, which is, oh, I can get, you know, maybe information about what, you know, what I have on my schedule for today, and I can add things. I can add things to a shopping list. If I'm walking around the kitchen, I can, you know, send a text message or reply to an email. Great. What's the next level of that where maybe your phone isn't anywhere, right? Maybe it's your mm-hmm. Apple TV and your network. I'm talking about, you know, and I started to think about this week with the AirPods, because I wasn't very excited about AirPods as mm-hmm. like earbuds for listening to music. But then I started mm-hmm. thinking about them because they have the smart technology where, you know, if you put one in your ear, it switches over automatically to mono, and it's got that beamforming special microphone with a noise canceling. Mm-hmm. I thought, what happens when, like, all of my devices together, my Mac, my Apple TV, my iPhones, my iPads, which are all connected to my network, all have access to the internet, all have Siri interfaces to them, and the AirPod can connect to any one of them and switch back and forth between any one of them. What happens when I'm just walking around the house with an AirPod in and I just want to do all kinds of computing tasks, right? Mm-hmm. And throw behind that not just voice recognition and parsing, but actually really throw behind it artificial intelligence and done in a very smart way. And we start to have the Star Trek like bridge computer, right?
Yep.
And not only that, I think, you know, the Echo, and people will say, well, the Echo's advanced on that and the Home thing from Google is advanced on that. I would say yes, but these things aren't a one-to-one interface necessarily. Like, you're in your living mm-hmm. room and you can issue a command, your husband can issue a command, but that Alexa doesn't know who's asking what and doesn't have any context behind that and isn't going to deliver a direct response. Everybody in the room is going to hear that response. So there's a privacy thing there.
Right.
There's a lot of things going on. And so to have something like in your ear and where you can issue a command and then it can do some processing, it can do some mm-hmm. stuff, and then it can return results directly back just to you is really interesting. And couple that with some of the, you know, facial recognition stuff that they're talking about and maybe being able to recognize who's speaking to it and how that person's speaking to it and know a few more things and keep all that, more importantly, keep all that private, not in the cloud. It's really, really interesting to me.
That's going to be interesting when Mr. Kelly can talk to, say, the Apple TV. We'll just use that. Right. When he can talk to the Apple TV and say, play my favorites in Apple Music. And then when I come home, I can say, play my favorites list in Apple Music, and it will know that that's not the same list.
Right.
That's going to be, for me, that's one of the things that I feel like I really want Apple, that I want that to be the next leap or bound, you know, that Apple makes is in fundamental shifts is right now the Mac is really the only device that Apple makes that has any sort of consideration that more than one person might use it, because you can have more than one user account on a Mac. Mm-hmm. It's not a thing on an iPad. It's not a thing on a phone. It's not a thing on Apple TV. Like, you have to, it's very cumbersome to have two different Apple IDs that sign into an Apple television, an Apple TV. So like, you have to pick one, or you have to home share, and it's all weird and everything's wrong. And like, none of it's quite what it needs to be. So when Apple figures out that, like, I mean, I know what they want is for everyone to have their own iPad, but like in real life, that's just not going to happen. So we really need to get to the point where, you know, particularly because I know a lot of people who have been through enough iPads, enough iPad iterations, that like somebody gets the new one, you know, every X years, whatever it is. One person in the house gets a new one, and the one that was theirs goes to the next person. That one goes down to the next person. And now the one that's like the house iPad that has the Harmony software on it, so you can run the TV and maybe some games, and it's got the Hue stuff on it, so you can run the lights and some other home stuff. You know, that iPad, like, it would be really nice if somebody could interact with that iPad and it would know the difference between them and me. So, you know, that was a thing that actually started tickling the back of my brain when I got my phone, my 6S, last year, because it listens to your voice. You have to walk through the Siri assistant and it sort of tunes to who you are. So Mr. Kelly thought he'd be funny and said, "Siri, call my mom," to my phone. And my phone didn't care. My phone didn't move. It didn't flinch. It didn't wake up. It didn't do anything. Because I'm trying not to break everybody's phones by saying it in the middle of your show.
Yeah.
Yeah. By saying the hey and then following it by the other things.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, like in most cases, that works pretty well. Like, it keeps Mr. Kelly from causing mayhem on my phone. But what's funny is I was hanging out with Jean McDonald and she said, "Hey, go add this thing to my reminders list." And both her phone and my phone lit up.
So we both had this reminder made. And
yeah, only one of us needed it. So
it just knows how close you guys are.
It does. It knows we're buddies. So clearly
it was
a to-do for me as well.
Yeah.
So for me, that was the thing that was very interesting was like, well, maybe, you know, it's tuning to my voice so that it knows to listen to me and it knows it knows the stuff that I want to do. And, you know, that maybe that will change somehow. And that was the thing that started making me wonder if Apple was wondering about this already. And I really hope that they are.
I think they are. Got any comments?
Because they need to. It's a thing that needs to change. I think it's the next evolution for iOS.
Victor? Any last
you guys
thoughts?
Have really said it all when it comes to this subject. So no, we're good to go.
All right. It's just cool. I'm excited to see what's next. And I really think it's, you know, what, I talked to a really smart guy named Brian Romilly. Follow him on Twitter and stuff like that, or go listen to the episode I did with him. He's into voice commerce, actually the developer of the Payfinders app. I don't know if you guys know Payfinders. It's an app that lets you find Apple Pay locations within, you know, a couple mile radius of where you are. Yeah, really smart guy. And he writes and talks a lot about what he calls voice first interfaces as the future. And I really think that this is something that Apple's going after. So that's it on that.
I really hope so.
So I want to get you guys out of here because we're about an hour and 30 minutes into this. So let's do a couple little quick picks. We'll start with Kelly and then we'll get out of here.
Okay. So I'm going to give a pick and then a bonus pick.
Okay.
Today, as we record this on the 30th of September, ThinkGeek has unveiled a new wave of Star Wars merch that you can purchase from them. Some exclusive to ThinkGeek and some is just new stuff in anticipation of Rogue One, which is coming in December, which is terribly exciting to me. For those of you who don't know, I'm actually wearing an R2-D2 shirt right now. I'm super duper Star Wars. So for $40, if you go hand over a couple of 20s to ThinkGeek, they will give you an R2-D2 French press. And it's a 32-ounce French press. It is a thing of beauty. There's a little handle in the back. You press down on the center of the dome in order to press the coffee down. It's really, I'm not going to lie, it's really awesome looking. And we've considered a French press at my house a few times in the past. And I'm thinking that this is going to be the thing that makes it happen.
I was going to say how fast did it get already ordered, but
yeah, it's still on pre-order, and I do have to give Mr. Kelly a chance because my birthday is in November. So I need to make sure that I'm not, you know, stepping on
just
any
drop
toes
a
there.
Big hint.
Yeah, basically. And they have a, like I said, they have a new wave of stuff that is very exciting.
When
you live
in general.
In Kelville. Yeah, they're all around awesome anyway. But now they have some of these things like the BB-8 waffle maker and, there's a special edition BB-8 Sphero that's also on pre-order. They have an R2-D2 fridge that's just really great looking. There's a space slug snow globe that I want more than is probably healthy. And all of it like looks fantastic. So you guys should totally check it out because some of this new stuff is really, really great. And my bonus pick, a very small pick, is also Star Wars-y. Last year, about this time, there were lots and lots of toys coming out for Episode 7. People were very excited about it. And it turned out that the person that all of the trailers had led us to believe was the main character in the movie didn't really have any toys out for them. And by them, I mean any. And it was Rey. Like, you couldn't find a Rey action figure any place. You couldn't find a Rey t-shirt any place. You couldn't find anything Rey-based anywhere. And so like most, I was really...
The most obvious thing that my kids still want, the 12-inch Rey, like, doll, like Barbie doll.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Nope.
Doesn't exist.
And it's important. And I'll tell you why. Because when I was a kid, I didn't want anything to do with Barbie dolls. And my mom didn't think that that should be a thing. And the way we compromised was she bought me the Barbie doll-sized Princess Leia. And so
awesome.
at least it was a compromise. Like, she could pretend it was a Barbie doll, and I still got to play with Princess Leia. So everyone was happy. Just about a week ago, I was at Fred Meyer, local, you know, very much like Target and Walmart, in that it's like groceries and then a bunch of other stuff too.
Right.
For people who aren't familiar with Fred Meyer, it's like a one-stop shopper kind of a thing. And on a shelf in the Star Wars section, they have a Sergeant Jyn Erso action figure. So you can go in and buy the main character of Rogue One right off a shelf. It's not a big deal. There they are. It's fantastic. So I'm pointing that out because I'm very excited about it. I have one on my desk right now. It's very pleasing to me. And I'm really glad that this is basically 100% different from a year ago, when I was searching high and low for the girl in the new Star Wars movie coming out and coming up empty left, right, and center. So for people who had that problem last year, you don't have to worry about it this year. It's not a thing because they actually made an action figure for the main character. I'm very excited.
Excellent. All right, Victor, what do you got?
All right. I was going to pick one thing, and I'm totally backing out and going back to what I spoke about earlier in the show, and that is iMovie. If you guys have not opened iMovie recently and played with it, it is fantastic. My friend Paul turned me on to this. And for those of you who don't know, the backbone of iMovie at this point is really about the same as Final Cut Pro 10, X, whatever.
Right, right.
Anyways, it's the same thing. But they have flattened out the interface. It's this beautiful black. The ability to do things like color correction in a way that mortals like me can do it at the push of a button is amazing. The ability to, you know, to change the look and feel of a clip, to change the speed, to do things with audio like ducking and lowering. It's really good. It's one of those applications, again, and I love finding this with my Mac, that I can take an application that I thought, and I can now say, geez, I can do 98% of what I could do in Final Cut here. And not only that, I can round trip it right from my phone's camera to the iPhone's iMovie, and then I can send it directly through iCloud, import it with transitions, titles, all right into iMovie to finalize it and export it out. Wonderful iMovie. Stuff. Check it out.
Yeah, I use it all the time.
Okay, so my new pick is Victor's iMovie class.
Anytime.
The only thing I'm going to say about iMovie, and this has bit me a couple times now, because I use iMovie all the time, but if you're going to take stuff from iMovie and post it online, specifically to YouTube, there's a weird issue where, especially if you're going to use like your iSight camera or your FaceTime camera, that's built into your devices. When you shoot video at 1080p now, that video is generally coming in at 60 frames a second. So when you bring that into a iMovie project, that iMovie project is 60 frames a second. And when you're finished and you export it, it exports at 60 frames a second. For some reason, 60 frames a second M4V video, when you try to upload that to YouTube, it freaks it out. It doesn't know how to deal with it. And the only problem with iMovie is there's no way to go back into your project easily that I can find. If someone knows, please tell me, because I don't know how to do it. There's no way to change back to 60 to 30 frames a second. The only workaround that I found is someone said, if you, the first clip that you put into your project sort of sets that project's frame rate. So you need to drop in a 30 frame per second video first. And then if you drop your 60 frame per second video after that, those will be converted. And then you can just delete the 30 frame at the beginning and it'll stay at 30 frames. Why it's like that, I don't know. And why there's not a setting, a project setting, to say, I want this to be 30 frames per second. And you can't control it on the export, as near as I can tell. So if anybody knows...
So this is...
Yeah, do you know a way,
Adam,
to do this?
This is something that I can... Yeah, well, it's a workaround in that you have to spend a little more money. But this is when, if you're going to use iMovie and not go to Final Cut Pro, buy Compressor. Because now, you know, with Compressor, you can totally export out, you know, from Compressor and not only change things like your frame rate, which you're right, 2997... 30 frames a second is kind of the standard for a video look, and 24 frames a second is when you want more of that movie type look. But in Compressor, you can change that. Not only that, but you can change things like the throughput of the video, so that if you're, you know, going to be publishing on phones and so on, you can literally change how much throughput there is, so that your video is then smaller and it plays more smoothly, even on smaller devices when you're shooting for that. Or you can go the other way and totally upscale the throughput so that you get, you know, very high throughput on your movies that way. So that's where that, I think it's $50 for a Compressor, makes the whole difference in that scenario you just spoke about, Adam.
Yeah, it's $49.99 on the Mac App Store. All right.
Okay.
That'd be a way to go. That would be very, very useful for me, because I keep making these videos and then I try to post them on YouTube and then they won't play. I mean, you just get blank.
And then, Adam, the other workaround you can do is just make yourself a 30 frame a second clip, you know, like on your iPhone using a third party app like Film MIC Pro.
Yeah, Filmic.
You know, and then just keep that in your file folder and just drop that in first in your project, like you said. Yeah. So that way it determines the rest of the file.
Very cool. All right. My pick's going to be really quick because I don't have this product yet. It's actually not even something I ordered. It's something that my daughter ordered and is very excited about. But he's coming on the 15th or 14th of October, I think. Anki, the company who made the really cool cars that Apple showed off at a keynote a while back, where, you know, the cars have some little AI built into them. So I'm, as you can probably tell from listening to this episode, I'm very excited about artificial intelligence and these kinds of things. So that same company is coming out with a new robot called Cosmo. And he's basically WALL-E for all intents and purposes.
Nice.
Tiny little guy, huge personality. He's got like little OLED screen on the front. It moves around. He's got a little lifting arm. He's got like tank track wheels. And the key thing about this is not cheap. He's a little toy, $180. He's almost $200. My daughter bought this with her own money. She'd saved it up and she's like, I want this thing. And he basically will learn your personality. He'll learn your face. He learns your emotional reactions and will start to react to that. Has little games that he can play. He comes with these little power cubes. So, you know, if he's winning a game, he'll get happy. If he's losing a game, he'll kind of get upset. They've got some great YouTube videos that kind of show some of this stuff.
Oh, my gosh.
He also has an SDK. So being the programmer that I am, when she'll let me play with it, if she'll let me play with it, I'm hoping. I'm going to play around a little bit with the software SDK and things like that and see what you can do. It comes with like a drive-on charging pad, and as near as I can tell, it sounds like he's going to be aware of like where his charging is and be able to sort of drive himself back there. He can do like edge detection on tables, and again, he'll react to different situations and learn, supposedly. So this is like the next generation of Anki's artificial intelligence that's in this little toy. So I'm very curious to see what this ends up being like. And I think it's $180 US on pre-order right now. So not cheap, you know, very technical toy, but a lot of high-tech technology in here. So
wow.
Fun.
Yeah. That sounds really cool.
Cosmo. Yeah, watch the videos. He's really cute. So that's my pick. I think that is going to do it. We'll wrap it up. Thank you both for agreeing to come on. It's nice to be able to actually talk to someone on the MacCast every once in a while. I do the show by myself most of the time. So very happy to have you both on. Is there anything, as we're wrapping up, let us know if there's anything you want to tell people about, anything you're up to, where they can follow you. Kelly?
Gosh. You can occasionally hear me on the Mac Observer Daily Observations podcast. You can also hear me on my show, The After Show with Mike and Kelly. And if you want to find out what I'm doing the rest of the time, you can look at and hopefully help out with App Camp for Girls at appcamp4girls.org. Cool. And I want to give a little shout out right here to the Release Notes Conference, where they're actually holding a fundraiser right now as we record this to raise additional money so that we're able to do things like iPad playgrounds with the developers next summer when we go to build camp.
Oh, we didn't even talk about that with iOS. Just a quick plug. Freaking, that's amazing.
Yep.
Oh, Swift Playgrounds. Oh,
Swift
yeah.
Swift Playgrounds on iOS. If you haven't played with it, do it. All right. And Victor, where can people find you and what you're up to?
Yes, on the Twitters, you can find me at Victor Cajiao, and Adam will put a link because it's too hard to spell. And my podcast, which I do about once a month, is called TerraTech, and that's at terratech.tech. And, you know, go check out past shows. It's one of those shows that's like evergreen because I talk to people about what they do for a living and how they incorporate technology, like in barbecuing. So go check it out.
Very cool. All right. Thank you both. So there you go, Victor Cajiao, Kelly Gamont. Love having both of them on. Really good friends. Another great thing about just getting into the whole podcast community is I've opened up my whole Mac community to a bunch of new friends, including listeners and stuff like that. I really love this stuff. And I often, like I said at the top of the show, you know, sitting here in my little room, my little studio by myself, sometimes, you know, you want to just invite some friends in and have a conversation. So I hope you enjoyed that. I love having a conversation with you all as well. So please send me any feedback, comments. Let me know how you're doing, what you're enjoying about maybe your new Mac products. And I'm looking for tips and tricks too in both iOS 10 and in Mac OS Sierra. So if you've run across a cool tip, send that in as well. But with that, that is going to do it for this episode of the MacCast. Before I leave you, I do want to take a quick moment and thank all of my show sponsors: Smile, makers of Text Expander, PDF Pen, Disc Label, also Text Expander for iPhone and iPad, along with PDF Pen for iOS and PDF Pen Scan Plus. You can get more information, details, and check out all of Smile's great apps by going to smilesoftware.com/MacCast. And Gazelle. Gazelle is the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. You can find out what your used iPhone, iPad, or other Apple products are worth by going to gazelle.com. Bandwidth for the MacCast is provided by CacheFly. You can find them at CacheFly.com. And all advertising on the MacCast is handled by Backbeat Media, and they are at backbeatmedia.com. There was lots of great stuff mentioned in this episode, but as always, whether it's this episode or any other one, you can get all the links to everything that we talked about in the show notes. You will find those at maccast.com. And while you're there, be sure to check out the forum at forum.maccast.com. If you have a comment, a question, something you'd like to hear covered on a future episode of the MacCast, you can send me emails. Shoot those to maccast@gmail.com, or you can call in on the listener hotline. That number is 281-622-4269, 281-MAC-IM-9. You can leave voicemail there as well, or you can leave voicemail for me on Skype. My Skype address is the MacCast. And if you want to follow me online between shows, I am on Twitter, twitter.com/MacCast. You can also check out the MacCast Facebook page over at facebook.com/TheMacCast. And if you're more of a Google Plus person, we also have a Google Plus community. That's at google.com/PlusMacCast. I try and pop in there every once in a while. I'm probably not as active as I would like, but I do that. I would say I'm much more active on Twitter versus Facebook or Google Plus, but happy to hang out anywhere. And if you do post there, I will try always to respond. So check all that stuff out. But with that, that is going to do it for today. Have a great weekend or enjoy the rest of your week, depending upon when you're listening to this. But that's going to do it for now. Until next time, I will talk to you all again real soon.